This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, good morning. How are you?
Boker Tov. There was an interesting weekend that was spent in Jerusalem by three hostages who were recently released: Matan Angres, Segev Kalfon, and Eitan Mor. And these were three who were kept together at least for some of the time while they were in the tunnels of Gaza. And over the last weekend, they joined with their families to go and spend the weekend in Jerusalem. And they were at a hotel together, and they sat down and they recreated and shared some of their memories about the times that they spent in those dark tunnels of Gaza and the special bond that formed between them during the time of their captivity. And they began to speak about Shabbat, about the Sabbath, and about how they responded to that while they were in Gaza. And these are people who were not necessarily observers of Shabbat before they were kidnapped, but over time, while they were in Gaza, and while they had time to think about their situation and where they came from and their roots, they felt that it was important to somehow mark and even observe Shabbat as much as they could. Now, they somehow came across a siddur, a prayer book. And they also apparently came across a book that had a daily Torah learning program, a study booklet. And I'm not exactly sure how they got to the Siddur, but I think it was Matan who said that he thought that he came across the study booklet completely by chance, because it may have been left behind by IDF soldiers who had previously been in that area. They found it. They just found it. And they would study this together. And they observed Shabbat by making kiddush, by making a prayer which is generally made over wine or grape juice, but they didn't have that, so they made it over water. And they would sing the Lechadudi, which is a tune that we sing on Friday evening to welcome the Shabbat, a traditional tune, one which is very, very well known across the Jewish world. They would sing that on Friday night, and they would tease each other by saying, "Don't fill up on salads." When they only had half a pita and a piece of cheese.
That's terrible. That's like gallows humor. Oh, that's just awful.
And then they also tried to observe the different festivals, the Chagim, and they discovered, at least on one occasion, that they'd spent a whole day observing a Chag, but the Chag was actually only the following day. And so they said, well, it was the thought that counts, rather than the fact that they observed it on the wrong day. And one of the thoughts that comes to my mind, and I have no answers to these things, but I hope maybe some of the listeners might be out there with some thoughts. Why is it that when we have these really tough times, we somehow dig deeper into our Judaism? They were there because they were Jewish and because they were Israeli. And that caused them to identify more rather than less with the reason why they were being mistreated. And one of the famous sayings that goes around, and I've heard many times, is that it's not so much that Jews keep the Shabbat. It's more that Shabbat keeps the Jews.
Absolutely.
And I just wonder what causes people in those dark moments to really want to be more observant and to really want to be more of what they're being discriminated about rather than less, rather than to say, this is really hard work. I don't really want to be Jewish. I don't want to be treated like a Jew anymore. I don't want to be the subject of
Exactly.
anti-Semitism.
That is so interesting.
And yet they dug deeper and they decided that they wanted to observe Shabbat and they wanted to keep it as much as they could. And they even tried to make Havdalah at the end of Shabbat, at the end of the Sabbath, which is the blessing that separates the holy from the regular, separates the Shabbat from the regular days of the week. And they said that sometimes they didn't have anything to make Havdalah on until Sunday or Monday or Tuesday. And so they waited in order to make the Havdalah. And I find these stories to be fascinating and not necessarily easy to explain or to understand. But maybe I'm missing something. I don't know. I mean, maybe there are psychologists out there who would have more views on this than I am. But it's incredible how entrenched it is, and that when the going gets really, really tough, when people dig deep into themselves, this is what comes out.
And this is consistent with almost every single interview I've had with Nova Festival survivors, because I always ask them the same question. The person that walked in to the Nova Festival versus the person who survived, who left, who walked out of the Nova Festival, how do they differ? And every single one of them spoke about faith and religion and knowing that they were spared for a greater reason, or and a sense of purpose. And it's just absolutely as devastating as it is, it's so inspiring, which I feel a bit guilty about. How can that? I mean, it's just remarkable. I do know that somebody, a friend of mine in Israel, said to me, who hasn't kept Shabbat, that if they could keep Shabbat in the tunnels, how dare they, her and her husband, not keep Shabbat? And then they started keeping. And like she said,
Interesting.
it's absurd. How can we not keep Shabbat if the hostages did it?
Yeah, I mean, it is inspiring. And I think for the hostages, somehow turning to that sort of spiritual side ultimately helped them to survive. It helped them, it gave them something to cling on to. I mean, aside from talking about their families and the traditional foods that they like to eat and swapping stories, which, obviously bouncing off each other was very important. But I think that clinging on to the central pillar of their spirituality and their Jewish identity, I think was key in helping them to somehow reinforce themselves, to somehow get through those tough times. That's the way that I see it. It gave them a reason to still want to be around. And, as one of them said, I was being singled out. I think it was Rom who said, I was being singled out for being Jewish. I felt good about that. I felt better than them because of that fact. And I think that that kind of summarizes it to some degree.
Yeah, it does. Just incredible and so inspirational. What do you think? What's your reaction to that? 0618951019. The UN Security Council has voted on a resolution to establish an international stabilization force in Gaza. What is the Israel's response? What is Israel's response to that?
Well, the whole vote, which took place late last night at the UN Security Council, I think was very fascinating. First of all, 15 members of the UN Security Council at the moment, five of them are permanent members, 10 are currently temporary members, including Algeria, Denmark, Greece, Guyana, Pakistan, Panama, South Korea, Sierra Leone, Slovenia, and Somalia. Those are the 10 temporary members. All of them voted in favor of the resolution. Three out of the five permanent members also voted in favor of the resolution. The only two who didn't vote in favor were China and Russia, who abstained. They felt that they couldn't find themselves ready to support any plan that had been put forward by President Trump and the US administration. And so instead of kind of exercising their veto, they just said they're going to abstain, which I read to mean agreeing with the plan, but not wanting to show it publicly in order to try to somehow save face. But interestingly, everybody did agree. And the 20-point Trump plan was attached to the UN Security Council resolution as an addendum. So that really forms part of the Security Council resolution, which allows for the establishment of this international stabilization force that is expected to be deployed in Gaza. We don't exactly know which countries will form the stabilization force. And it talks about, the rebuilding of Gaza, and it talks about leading on a path towards a Palestinian state. By the way, it also talks about strengthening the Palestinian Authority, which was one of the things that some Israeli politicians were very much against. They felt that this was not a good idea. And the idea of it leading on a path towards a Palestinian state also has certain controversies surrounding it. And I'd like to talk a little bit about that. Interestingly, by the way, Hamas has come out saying the idea of an international stabilization force in Gaza is a terrible idea, that this international stabilization force cannot be independent and will ultimately become part of the problem and will be politicized and will become one of the players in the field rather than acting in the way that is intended as some sort of an independent authority. The Israeli ambassador to the United Nations, Danny Danon, was given the opportunity to speak. And unsurprisingly, he focused his comments on the whole concept of disarming Hamas, because as we discussed yesterday, this seems to be an issue that, even though it was one of the key principles of the 20-point plan, seems somehow to be in the process of being diluted, and that it looks almost like there will be compromises around this idea of Hamas being disarmed, and potentially even the idea that Hamas won't be part of the future government in Gaza. But I do want to focus for a moment on the issue of a path towards Palestinian statehood. A number of politicians, Israeli politicians, have come out opposing this idea, most notably Avigdor Lieberman, and also, of course, Itamar Ben-Gvir and Bezalel Smotrich, who unsurprisingly have come out against this. The Prime Minister seems to be quite supportive of the idea of this leading on a path to Palestinian statehood, even though he said a number of times that there can be no Palestinian state right now. And I think that that's probably right. But my question is, if there isn't a Palestinian state at some point in the future, then what are our alternatives? And I haven't really heard a good alternative plan to the idea of a Palestinian state. What are the issues that we are confronting? Well, first of all, 2 million people, some of whom have admittedly left the Gaza Strip over the past while, including a plane load who've arrived in South Africa, and there are a few of those around other countries around the world, but really no substantial movement of people away from Gaza. And by the way, if there was this idea that President Trump at one point had suggested of moving Palestinians out of Gaza, I mean, that could be considered some sort of a genocide of sorts, even though it's not a killing of people. But to try to split people up and to remove them from their homeland will only create a whole myriad of new problems. So we have a community of 2 million people who need to have a place to live and who need to have a governing authority to be in charge of wherever they live. Israel would not wish to assume that role, even though Bezalel Smotrich and Itamar Ben-Gvir seem to have this idea that Israel should be in charge of the Gaza Strip. I can't see any possibility of Israel governing over the Gaza Strip. And I can tell you that in Israel, as an Israeli taxpayer, I wouldn't want my tax
Sure,
money
of
to
course.
go there. I wouldn't want that to be the case. So what then are the alternatives? Well, there aren't too many of them. And I think that ultimately the idea of a Palestinian state is probably the best idea. It is highly problematic and is not a simple solution. But I think ultimately it's really the only one. And if we can find a way to get there in a peaceful and in an acceptable way where there is cooperation and there is international community involved, I think that that needs ultimately to be the solution. But I'm guessing you guys might have your views, so I'd be willing to hear them, because this is really not an easy problem to
Not
resolve.
an easy one at all. Let us have your thoughts on 061 89.
0818951019. That's the WhatsApp line. It is 801. We do need to go to news headlines. That was the Israel Report with Anthony Reich. You can catch Anthony tomorrow morning at 7:45.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you're based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.